This conversation is not my top priority right now because I wanted to tear his head off. Oh my God, if I could have got down the phone, I would have wrung his neck.
Good phone pun.
So welcome along. It is the Still Parents podcast. I'm Dan here with Ryan and with Matt from the Lily Mae Foundation. And thank you very much for tuning in, whether you are watching and listening to the stream live or listening back through your podcast provider. Whenever that is, we are here supported by Global's Make Some Noise. If you have any questions, if you have anything that you would like to say at any point, whether it's live, you can do so during the chat or you can get hold of us on our social Still Parents podcast. Joining us in the studio tonight, and thank you for coming in. James, am I saying your surname correct? Hibbard.
You are.
Hibbard.
Yes. Yeah.
So the reason why we do the podcast is to get guests in to come on. And the main reason why we started it was to, although it's not exclusively aimed at men, but it's primarily because as the stereotypes go, we don't talk enough. We don't maybe talk about the right things. You know, we talk a lot of bollocks, but maybe it's not always the things we should be talking about. I think there's a way that you can combine the both. If you are chatting and having a bit of, you know, just talking about whatever it is, you know, as guys, it can be helpful for the actual conversation that we want to tackle further down the line. So we appreciate you coming in because obviously you're here because you lost your child.
Yes. Yep.
And it's coming up to 4 years ago, I believe. Was it December 2020, was it?
December 2020, yeah. Yeah. 10th of December.
Her name was Pip.
Yep.
So before we talk about that, just a bit about you because you're married, right?
I certainly am.
To Laura.
Yeah.
How long have you been married for?
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
And what do you do for a living?
So I'm a geography teacher.
Oh, wow.
Colouring in by numbers.
What is geography?
It's a mixture of everything. Modern history, that's what it is.
Right.
Yeah, history of the now.
The only thing I ever remember from geography, a meander.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. So we do that.
In a river. That's a bend in a river. I know that.
Because it's one of those subjects I remember at school when I was like, I didn't mind history, but I see geography on my timetable. I'm like,
I hated it.
I like geography.
You hated it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but do you know what? Yeah. As well, I did history at GCSE and I wish I'd done geography.
Okay.
Because you can colour in by numbers.
So what made you become, if you didn't like it, did you just sort of fall into it then eventually?
Yeah, kind of. It was the only thing, I was working in the school. I've always worked with children since I finished university.
Okay.
In different ways.
How old are you now?
I'm 39.
Are you looking well, man?
Yeah, thank you very much.
I thought it was like 30.
There you go.
Wow.
Look at that. Everybody should come on this.
It's the filters.
Yeah. So I worked with children for a long time and I ended up working in a school, the school that I'm now teaching.
Right.
And it was the only thing that I could kind of convert my degree to. It's a very, very wishy-washy degree.
Go on, what was it?
Adventure Tourism Business Management. Exactly.
You wanted to be a travel agent.
Pretty much. I wanted to climb mountains. I wanted to go walking and hiking and do all that sort of stuff.
Adventure Tourism Business Management.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Wow.
Very, very diverse.
No. James was the last one.
not the current cost of going to university. It wasn't worth it. It wouldn't be worth it.
So did you always want to be a teacher or maybe just of a different subject?
No, not at all.
Not when
I was a child. Like, certainly not when I was at school. Couldn't stand it. I don't actually know why I went to uni, other than the social.
Drink.
I think it was pretty much that. My sister had gone, and I was kind of like, a couple of years later, I was like, maybe I should just go and do that. Sounded like a bit of a DOS. I don't know how I managed to stay on
an expensive DOS.
Hey, you know what? Well, it worked out, wasn't it? You met Laura, and you're a geography teacher.
And now I'm a geography teacher, yeah.
Do you have any other children?
Yes.
You do.
Well, actually, coincidentally, it's Margot's first birthday today. So Margot's
is it today?
Rainbow baby, yeah.
Happy birthday, yeah. Margot.
Happy birthday, Margot.
And thank you for coming out as well.
Thank you very
much. I feel a bit guilty now.
No,
well, I mean, she's only one. It's not like she's at home getting pissed, is it?
Wow. Oh, wow. Well, happy birthday to Margot.
Yes.
I'm going to ignore Ryan.
She's just at home having a pint and cake.
I've had this conversation with people before. They're like, on the first and second birthdays, you don't need to be there because they'll never remember it. But like, it's more about how you feel. Clearly, Ryan didn't get shit.
my old man claims he didn't know me till I was five.
I still don't know you and you're 39.
Oh, damn. you lost Pip in December 2020. If you don't mind talking and taking us through, and Ryan and Matt will come back with some questions. If anyone listening live would like to ask anything or say anything to James as well, please do so through the chat.
So the whole pregnancy and stuff was all a little bit strange because we were in lockdown. So first COVID lockdown when we conceived. You know, a little bit more time on your hands makes things a little bit easier. And
nothing else to do.
There we go, exactly.
There was a baby boom though, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, definitely a baby boom. So we found out, obviously, that we were having Pip, and it, we were having Pip, and we were in the process of going through lockdown. We then kind of, restrictions and everything kind of let off again, and we, as me as a teacher, we went back to school in September, and then we found out that we were having complications and things on her Laura's 28 week scan. Okay. So we'd gone back in. There was some not complications as such, but some of the testing that gets done, one of the levels was not right. So we had to go in and have an extra scan. And then when we went in at the 28 week scan, we went to Stratford, I think it was, to start off with. Went to the hospital, and they were just a little bit like, yeah, something's not right. We'll send you over to Warwick. And me and Laura, we just thought that everything was just, you know, just run of the mill. But we got into Stratford, and then we he then sent us across to Warwick, and they'd said, obviously, the heart rate is a little bit slow. Okay. So we're going to send you over to Warwick. We're going to do some more tests. At this point, we were having a bit of a laugh and a joke. I play rugby. Laura plays hockey. We were like, oh, it's just an athlete. It's just a baby athlete. Low heart rate. Good, you know, heart resting rate. Heart rate. Perfect.
Oh, okay.
It's
going
to be absolutely fine. So we went over to Warwick, and then things all started getting a little bit real. They started talking about delivery, and we're like, hang on. Pump the brakes a little bit. What's going on? And then they kind of explained that they thought that there was a problem with the heart. The heart rate was really, really low. Baby's heart rate should be between 120 and 160 beats per minute.
Yeah.
We found out then that Pip's was 47. So 47 beats per minute. So yeah. Really, really low. Luckily enough, a consultant came in and said, actually, the baby doesn't seem like she's in any distress. Although her heart is really, really low, one of the things they look at is high drops. So high drops are building up of fluid around the kind of neck and the you know, into the skull and things. And she had none of that. So they were like, right, let's slow down a little bit. They'd obviously given Laura drugs and things to help should they have to deliver straight away there at 28 weeks.
So you're still feeling fairly calm around this time? You're not, you know, there's alarm bells ringing, but maybe...
I think both of us were quite calm until that point where somebody then said, well, we're going to get you ready for a delivery. And we were like, whoa, this is, now it's going really, really fast. So the consultant then said, right, I know somebody at Birmingham Women's Hospital. I'm going to get in contact with them. And within an hour or so, we were in the car and drove across. They said it was just the easiest thing to do was for you to get in the car and take yourself over. So we went over, and we then met with our then consultant, who's now she's in charge of the hospital over at Birmingham Women's Hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think we were quite lucky in that respect. Yeah. And then we met with them. They did a lot more testing. Obviously, the equipment they've got over there is absolutely incredible. And then we found out that she had what's called a full heart block. So heart block is to do with the heart. In the center of the heart, you've got a kind of what looks like a junction box, or they described it to us as a junction box. It's a node that takes signals in, which tell the bottom chambers of the heart to pump. And it was switched off, pretty much, is the way that they described it to us. So top part of the heart was working fine, but the bottom part of the heart wasn't working at all.
Okay. It was a heart block.
Heart block. Yeah. So you can have a kind of partial heart block where the heart is still beating, but it's much higher than what.
That's quite rare as well, is it?
It doesn't happen very often. Yeah. So Laura's got a autoimmune disorder, which is to do with her hormone. It's a secretion hormone that fights against her body, so she doesn't produce tears. She doesn't really produce any saliva. So.
Oh, wow.
It's real. It must be horrible to deal with, like to live with all the time.
Yeah.
One of the complications that can be linked to that is that you can have a heart block. It's very much a case of it happens, if it's going to happen, it happens with your first pregnancy. And what can happen is you have an antibody which can pass through the placenta and it goes into the baby, and then it goes through into the heart and it does something to turn this junction box off. So that was kind of what happened.
Right.
Being COVID, we didn't necessarily have all of the testing that we'd had when we had Bertie.
How old is Bertie now? Sorry.
So Bertie's going to be six in June.
Okay.
So he's a few years older now. And then since we had Margot as well, we went through all of the testing that we should have, you know, that we had with Bertie.
Yeah.
Whether or not, you know, I've had this battle several times in my head. If we had had those tests that we should have had, really, that we had with Bertie and then we subsequently had with Margot, would that have actually made any difference to the outcome? Would it have prolonged the kind of 6 weeks of anguish that we had between finding out at 28 weeks and when she was actually delivered?
Yeah.
I don't actually think that would have made any difference. I think we might have gone in for a scan at say 16 weeks and realized then, well, would we have then just been prolonging the same anguish that we then had for that final 6 weeks? So when I talk about the final 6 weeks, we found out at 28 weeks, and then we kind of, when we went into the Birmingham Birmingham Women's Hospital, they told us that, you know, let's come up with a plan. So the plan is, her heart rate is really, really low. They kind of grade it almost. So around about 100, it's, you know, it's bad, it's difficult, but it's not something that isn't going to be, I'm not sure.
It's more manageable, I guess.
Manageable, yeah. I think. Yeah. And, you know, they deal with several people all the time that have that sort of level. When things start dropping below 80, you know, things are getting bad.
That's what happened to Callie. Callie's heart went from like 100, normal, and we were told afterwards, normal, to like around 45, something like that, and they just couldn't bring her back.
Yeah.
That was basically what it, in the end, yeah. So
they said, you know, when things start getting below 50, you're in a sticky situation, you're in a difficult spot. So the plan was that we would go in every week, we get proper full heart scan, Laura gets checked, and just to make sure that there's no sign of, like I said before, high drops. So high drops build up when the heart isn't working properly. Okay. And it builds up the fluid around the... builds up fluid in places where there shouldn't be fluid if the baby's not moving around.
Yeah.
So it's not only fatal for the baby, it can be fatal for the mum as well.
Straight away, your routine's completely different.
Yeah.
It's on your mind. It's probably at the forefront of every conversation, more or less, that you're having away from your daily responsibilities, you and Laura together, and looking after Bertie at the time. How did you find that time
really,
mentally and emotionally as a couple?
We got to a stage where we would go in like for a week and it would take a day off your normal kind of routine to go in. Then you'd obviously, you know, have that drive home. The next couple of days would be kind of a little bit more normality would set in. All right, okay, well, the scan was okay. She's okay. That's all good. And then the next couple of days after that, you then start thinking, oh, shit, here we go. We've got that test coming.
The countdown's coming
on Tuesday. Yeah, and then you're thinking, right, what are we going to be walking into when we go in there? I'm trying to juggle kind of work and stuff. We'd gone back. So that happened during the October half term. So then I kind of went back to work, you know, at the beginning of the next week, and you're kind of like, oh, people ask you questions. How's everything going? And we're like, well, you know, things have all taken a bit of a...
Were you open about it?
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went straight in actually on the first day back, and I kind of processed it over a couple of days. And in my head, I had like a new GCSE class. So like a class of students that were going to be doing their GCSE in the September. And obviously everything had been messed up for education the year before. And I went in and I went to my boss and I was like, we're going through this. Whatever happens, if she has a pacemaker, which is what they would end up needing to do at the end, if Pip has a pacemaker, we're going to be in a lot of rehab. I'm not going to be able to function at work in the way that I would like to be able to do. And I was very open. I just went in and I said, look, you need to sort something out so that somebody can take over my high-level classes. Mm. I'm going to be generating a lot of cover. I'm not in the class at the moment because, well, one, when I am in there, I'm thinking
you're
about
not
something
there.
Else.
Yeah.
And I know that this... Not that I was ever thinking that this was going to go wrong, because I didn't think that at all. I always thought, when I say go wrong, obviously, with her final death, I always thought, well, I can't give what I would usually give to the students. Let's get a plan in place where I can still work, still do the stuff that I need to do, and then kind of, you know.
And were they supportive?
Really, good. Really, really supportive. Good. And have been all the way through.
Brilliant.
I couldn't ask for anything more. I was thinking about this on the drive home the other day, some of the things that we'd kind of done afterwards. And just simple things like, I had one day when I'd gone back finally, kind of the following February, when I went back to work, and I'd had an argument with a parent on the phone over something really trivial. You know, I'm ahead of year as well, so I had a bit more responsibility. So I had an argument with a parent, and somebody just kind of came in. I walked from one side of the school across to the other, and I just burst into tears. The whole load of emotion just came out, and one of the ladies that I now work really, really close with just came, put an arm around me, walked me into a room and said, "You're going home." She's got, you know, best one in the world, no power whatsoever within the school. No ability to send somebody home.
Didn't matter, you're just going home.
Was it a dinner lady?
Well,
that's amazing though, isn't it? Just the fact that someone can see and have the emotional intelligence to go, I mean, something, I'm not sure exactly how close you guys were to the degree of what she understood, but you know, and you see, you know when someone's not right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when someone, because especially with, it's the British stereotype, isn't it? You ask someone, "Are you all right?" "Yeah, yeah, I'm fine," you know.
Yeah.
So from that point up until the birth.
Yeah.
Thank you for reliving it, because it's fucking horrible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you mind continuing with that?
Absolutely. So over the next 6 weeks then, we would go in at least once a week to be tested, heart scanned, looking for these high drops. Was there anything, what was going to be going on? Anything bad that was happening, you know? And the plan was just to make Pip's lungs as well developed as they possibly could be. So it was all about making sure that should we then go into a labour of some description, then that she would have the best chance of surviving.
Yeah.
So we finally got to about 6 weeks. We were due to go in, I think it was on like a Wednesday or something, and the night before or the day before, Laura was like, "Something just doesn't feel right." They'd always said, "Anything, we just need to make phone up, just go straight in. You know, even make the phone call in the car, just be on the way in here and we will get you tested. We'll do whatever it is." So they said, Laura just started feeling a lack of movement. It just wasn't how it had been previously. So we then went into the hospital and they said, "Right, okay, it seems like, as you said, you're saying that she's slowing down a little bit. Heart still looks okay. However, we think now's the time to go." So it was a case of, right, we're going to get all of the ducks in a row. So the following day we were being, Laura was having a cesarean then to deliver Pip. And then the plan was then to take her straight across to Birmingham Children's to then have a pacemaker fitted. So with a pacemaker, then they would be able to manually control the heart. And the plan was that she would always need a pacemaker. So she would always need something to help regulate her heart, because obviously it wasn't ever going to be the node that was being switched off never going
to
be switched
back
on.
But there's the technology there to do it. So your expectations at the time were this there's going to be challenges and we're going to deal with it, but you were still,
there's an answer in place.
I think it was the 6 weeks, the people that were there, the conversations that we were having with them were, we always knew in the background that yes, there was a possibility that we could lose her. But I think that we were quite positive. We're positive people anyway, I think.
Yeah, I can see that.
And we would just, we were always, well, that's what's going to happen. And it'll be tricky. It'll be really difficult to deal with. It's going to be very life-changing for everybody. But we'll be able to deal with it and be able to cope with it. So they got everybody ready. So they had then the heart surgeon team that were then ready over at Birmingham Children's Hospital. There's a transport team that come to Birmingham Children's, come to the Women's Hospital. So they come over, they're a designated unit. They'll take babies in situ. They'll operate, well, not operate as such, but they'll look after them in the vehicle on the way over as they then get blued across to the other side of the city.
Yeah.
There's then the delivery team. There was a team for Laura. Something like 37 people were in the delivery.
I was about to ask. Wow. Sounds like a lot of people.
It was crazy.
Wow.
It was really strange. So I was in there with Laura, and then obviously just a few people were in there to start off with, but you could kind of see this milling around of people outside getting stuff ready, people to come in once she was delivered, making out, checking her out and all that
stuff. That must be comforting and terrifying in equal measures, because why is there so many people?
Yeah.
But also, there's lots of help here.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty, it was full on. It was really, really full on. So once she'd had the delivery, then Pip was delivered. They took her out. She was fairly healthy. There were a couple of complications that we weren't expecting, things that nobody had ever worked out. So she didn't have any thumbs, which was quite strange. We went back and we had some kind of genetic testing and things. Wow. They never really found a reason behind it. I suppose I always put it down in my head that she had gone through the whole of her gestation without getting the oxygen probably that she needed because her heart's not working, and that's probably what it was. They didn't ever really find out anything conclusive as to why she didn't have thumbs. So that was a bit strange.
Yeah, that's odd.
One of her arms wouldn't stretch out completely. So, you know, it was just a few oddities, really, that we weren't expecting. But she then got whisked across to Birmingham Children's Hospital, and the pacemaker fitting went phenomenally well. Like, they told us better than they were expecting. It just all went to plan. So I stayed with Laura for a few hours because obviously she was in surgery, and I stayed with Laura. They let me go into the hospital, which they weren't technically supposed to do because we're now into the second lockdown at this
still
point.
Still on, wasn't it?
So like the Christmas kind of that all went a little bit pear-shaped. So it was in the middle of that. They let me stay for a few hours, and then I went over to Children's Hospital, and then I was able to stay with Laura at Children's with Pip at Children's Hospital. So I stayed over there for a little bit, and everything was going quite well. It got to about 11 o'clock in the evening, and I was absolutely exhausted. And in my head, all I wanted to do the following day was take Bertie to nursery. I just wanted to get back into that kind of
normality.
And I was like, right, I'm going to go. There's nothing really that I can do here other than sit. I need to get a few hours sleep. And from that point, it all started going a little bit wrong. Drove out of the hospital. My phone had died, so I didn't know 100% where I was going to get out of town. Drove out, managed to get onto the road that I knew where I was going. It took me nearly 2 hours to get to Stratford from Birmingham, Stratford-upon-Avon. We were staying at Bertie was at Laura's parents' house. Took me like 2 hours of just driving around God knows where. I don't know what was going on until I managed to finally get onto the main road on the way home. I spoke to Laura's dad as I came in. It was like, right, I'm going to get a couple of hours kip and then I'll go drop Bertie off in the morning, then I'll go back and see everybody. And then I got woken up by Laura's dad about 4 o'clock in the morning. So Laura had been contacted by the nurses had been contacted by the Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
Obviously she's still in Women's Hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
So they'd contacted her. She was trying to get hold of me. My phone had died I thought I'd plugged it in, but I hadn't switched the switch And then Laura had then managed to get in contact with her dad via the home phone, and he kind of given me a nudge and said, you need to get into hospital. So there's some complications then with Pip. And what happened, she got to a point where she couldn't regulate her blood pressure. So in the end, it was a link to the fact that she couldn't regulate her blood pressure. At the time, you weren't able to, Laura wasn't allowed to get any help or support to leave the hospital. So because she'd just had surgery, it was against medical advice for her to have left.
Oh, right, yeah.
So she obviously, they were telling her that she needed to come over because things were going really, really bad. She needed to be at Birmingham Children's Hospital.
Even if it's just moving from one hospital to
because she wouldn't have been an inpatient in the hospital.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So they were saying at the time that you weren't allowed to do it. So she's just obviously had a C-section. She's less than 12 hours into a C-section.
Yeah.
She wasn't allowed a wheelchair. She had to walk down from the top floor. They wouldn't give her anybody to help her to get down onto it. They wouldn't even call her a taxi. So in the end, I drove from Stratford to Birmingham Women's Hospital, and then we obviously drove across to Children's Hospital.
I'm assuming it didn't take 2 hours on that.
It didn't take two hours on that one. I was very sensible, you know. I just kept it a nice constant.
We've had lots of guests saying they don't remember that. You know, that horrible drive when you're on your own and it's that moment.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with it. And some of the guests we've had on saying it's literally it's like teleported.
Yeah, you just got to get there, and you don't really.
Do you know what?
What was going on?
I understand that they can't technically help her. But there becomes a point whereby you just have to go against protocol for the good of the patient, i.e. Laura, but also the fact that her child is extremely unwell.
Yeah.
How on God's earth can somebody not show a human side and go against protocol? I just don't get it. These sort of stories just baffle me.
Yeah.
I mean, James, really you know, as a teacher... Listen, I've done it. I've had to bend rules when I was ahead of year to keep some kids in school.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what I allowed them to do at times, but I had to bend rules to keep them on my side.
Yeah.
You can't always go by the book. There's times whereby you have to deviate. As a teacher where you have a lesson plan, you never stick to a lesson plan. You deviate in different directions because of the response that you get from the pupils.
100% that was the situation that we were in. So I picked Laura up, we went across to Children's Hospital, and then from there, obviously, we're taken into the intensive care unit, which was where she was. Mm. And then the plan was that they wanted to go in and do a secondary operation. So when they'd put the pacemaker in, all they needed to pace was the bottom part of the heart, because that was a part that wasn't working.
Yeah.
So the plan was that they brought the surgeon back in, and then they went in to do a secondary operation to put then pacing wires on both parts of the heart until they could work out what was going wrong to get the blood pressure working. The plan was that they would be able to manually control both areas, and therefore that would obviously keep her alive, really. It was in the process of doing the secondary operation that her heart just wasn't strong enough, and it gave up, and then obviously she died.
I'm so sorry, Mum.
And it's that moment, isn't it? Like, in it, but it's the whole listening to your story. It's that again. What really comes into the picture for me is just the speed of the whole thing. Right, that we've talked about this before. The speed of baby loss is like all of a sudden, like, you know, the travel out on Gladiators where you're going up. But it's that. But you're going down it. So all of a sudden you're getting on the travelator, but it's going the direction you're going, and you can't control the speed of everything because it just gets so quick. And like, it goes from nothing to 100 miles an hour all of a sudden. You're kind of bobbing and bobbing and bobbing. And then,
That started at the 28-week scan for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Things are changing. What was a normal kind of trajectory... And then everything just starts.
Exactly.
Everything goes out of the water, and you're just concentrating on one little hurdle after another.
And let's
get to that next week.
Yeah.
Let's get to the week after.
But the day before that 28-week scan, your life was just bobbing along, right?
We were in a spa. We'd gone down to a friend's house, and then we'd gone for like a little mini moon, or whatever they call, a little spa break, just to have a bit of time away. And then we came back, and the next thing that we were coming back for was a 28-week scan.
And that's what I mean. Like, it just, the speed of things is just ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous how quick things change.
I do want to talk about Bertie, who's now six. So would have been two?
So
round about, more or less?
Yes. Yeah. I think that the process of grieving would have been a lot worse if we didn't already have Bertie, because it gives you that kind of motivation to get up, to make sure that you're on the ball, looking after him, you know, making sure that everything's all right. He chucked us under the bus one day, mind, so this had happened on the Thursday. She died on, I want to say it was the Thursday morning, if not, it was the Friday morning.
Okay.
On the Sunday, Laura had had some complications, so she was struggling really badly with like a headache. And we're kind of like, oh, this is strange. If she was laid down flat, she was absolutely fine. And then if she stood up, she had like a 10 out of 10 smashing headache. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but she had, she ended up having to go back into hospital because in the process of having her epidural to do the delivery, they'd nicked slightly the spinal column.
Ooh.
So you get it's an air bubble.
Yeah.
So it's like a spirit level bubble, and you stand up and it sends the bubble up to the brain, and obviously it causes you a massive load of pain. So
you say it so casually.
Yeah. I wasn't going through it.
that sounds horrific.
That's a geography teacher for you.
It was pretty it was very, very, very challenging. However, So I was on the phone to 111 trying to work out what we needed to do. In the process, Bertie ran in. He was, 18 months, just over it. And he ran in and he had something white around his mouth. And he was like, "Daddy, I need a drink. Daddy, I need a drink." And he was rubbing his mouth like this. And he'd grabbed a packet of ibuprofen that were on the side. So Laura had obviously started taking, paracetamol for this terrible headache. And it had gone on, obviously, since she died, this headache. But we weren't sure if whether or not we were just, grieving and, there's lots of tears, loads of emotion. Is there actually anything wrong? So anyway, she's taking some tablets and he grabbed it and he'd bitten the corner off the packet. Luckily enough, he'd only probably consumed about less than a third of a paracetamol. And in the end, they said it was probably less than taking a syringe full of Calpol.
The kid's dose, right.
Oh, my God.
But still.
It was just that.
Wow.
We really needed that on the day that we were then being told that we had to go back into a hospital to go and have this a procedure done for Laura to be able to sort out this.
Well, first thing you're thinking is, bloody, how many's he had?
Exactly.
Overdosed. It's funny, but it's scary. Once you realise it's okay, it's like, oh, you little bugger.
Yeah.
But beforehand, it's...
Bertie running around popping ibuprofen, Yeah.
It was an interesting conversation with the social worker that then phoned me the week after. I managed to bite my tongue. You could tell that this was some kid on the end from social services that was phoning us to talk to us about the fact that we'd allowed our child to eat paracetamol or ibuprofen or whatever. And I was like, we're kind of going through something at the moment. Not that we're making excuses from getting hold of it. We certainly won't be allowing tablets, but this conversation and the conversation with you is not my top priority right now. So thank you very much for your time. I'm going to have to politely have to hang up because I wanted to tear his head off. Oh my God. If I could have got down the phone, I would have wrung his neck.
Good phone pun.
So I would have, Bertie, other than that, was brilliant. And obviously we then got Christmas to take in.
Right.
So we've got to try and keep Christmas fairly, normal or as normal
that
as you
must
can
have been
after
difficult,
COVID. Man. It was really tricky. I'm not going to lie, people might shout us down, but we got the family that we could together because you weren't supposed to be, it was the second lockdown, you weren't supposed to be mixing.
Oh, everyone was doing it by then, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So we managed to get kind of family and stuff together to try and make it as normal as it possibly could be. But yeah, Christmas doesn't have the same kind of excitement necessarily is what it used to. It's brilliant. It's amazing to see Bertie and Margo now with Christmas and everything.
Does Bertie know and understand nearly six now?
I said obviously I got woken up by my dad, by Laura's dad. Got woken up by Laura's dad and Bertie woke up at that point whilst I was getting ready to go out. So this is like half four in the morning. He woke up and he came out onto the landing as I was like, well, I've got to go back to hospital. He didn't want to stay at his grandparents. We probably battled for about a year or so. He used to go anywhere and he would sleep anywhere and it was absolutely fine. And we always felt that he processed the fact that we were leaving with staying at his grandparents' house and he wouldn't go and stay at his grandparents'.
Oh, yeah, probably.
He really hated it. He didn't like it at all.
Is that because he didn't have any Nurofen?
Yeah, there was nothing to keep him going. So that was that was difficult. And he's done a lot with you guys. He's done some art therapy here with the Lily May. And he obviously goes to a lot of the events and he talks a lot about her as well. Talks about her all of the time. If we see robins and things, so a robin obviously he's always like, oh, that's Pip. We were at the zoo yesterday and he saw that and he talked about her and he'll talk about her on a almost daily basis. He'll talk about her. So he knows a lot about her. And I think that we've tried to create that as well with him. We want him to be open and know exactly about his sister. He knew that something was going on. So when we got to this 28-week, his behaviour changed afterwards. He knew that something was going on and we had to tell him and explain to him that things weren't right. Well, it was
it's amazing, isn't it? How someone who's not old enough to wipe their own arse, but they know about what's going on with your relationship with your parents, and they can sense something. I probably could have worded that better, but you know what I mean.
He was in a situation like he knew that something was not right, because the days that we were going in for the scans, I'd be at home and I wouldn't be going off to work. So that would be
the routine, this
is very strange. So taking him to nursery and stuff, it was very odd.
How long was it before you had the conversation, you and Laura, about, well, Margot?
With Margot.
Yeah, the rainbow.
So it wasn't that long afterwards, actually. I want to say a year or so. Do you know what? I can't even process the dates in my head at the moment. So Margot's what? She's just turned one, 2003. So what would it have been?
We said she's having a fat party at home tonight.
She is. She's on the booze. She's gone through all of my beers.
She's on the booze and Bertie's on the ibuprofen.
There's a drum and bass on in the background.
No wonder you've come here.
Thought I'd get out.
So it was planned, and it was planned. Yeah, and it was something you wanted to go ahead with. And that must have been, as we've mentioned before, that can't have been an easy pregnancy, because you've scarred.
Yeah,
from
definitely.
Previous.
It was about making sure that we got all of the scans and everything, that we knew what we needed. We left on very good terms, actually, with Birmingham Women's Hospital after, obviously, with everything with Pip. And they were all very much, you know, if you do go into pregnancy again, please do get in contact with us and we will make arrangements so you can come in and be tested and whatever. So we had a kind of agreement with them that should we need to, we'll go in and see them. And we did all the way through. I don't know if everybody else is as lucky as that, which I would imagine potentially they're not. But for us, that was it took away a little bit of what was a very stressful situation.
Okay, yeah.
I wouldn't want to go through pregnancy again. It's fried my little brain. I struggled a lot, I think, more so with this one than what I did before. Did my little brain in.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast tonight. You've got this calmness about your manner as well, the way that you put things.
Too laid back.
Yeah. Did you get told that?
No, I am.
Talks very well, actually.
Yeah, that's what I mean,
yeah. You do talk very, very well. Very succinct, to the point.
That's a good word.
It's a big word, isn't it, Matt? Too big for you. Do you know what it means, Matt? Right.
I'm just trying to get it in my head.
When someone asks you if you know what the word succinct means, just say yes. That's all you need to do.
Yes.
I'm not having you on, trust me.
Yeah.
One thing I want to mention, actually, before we round off, because the way that you seem to have handled things and your outlook on life, there have been days when you just like, fuck the world, fuck everything. And was there a particular moment that stands out that you really struggled, or Laura, or together?
For me, I think being in a lockdown was actually, I was quite lucky. It gave me a bit of a lead time to kind of get back in. So this had obviously happened I didn't go back to work until the end of February half term. So it just so happened it was like the last week in February, and this had happened at the beginning of December. So I'd had a decent chunk of time off. I then went back in and there were only certain kids that were in, so it was only a few children that I was kind of mixing with. I had to start making some phone calls and stuff, but actually I didn't really see any kids then until the April, so by which point I kind of processed a little bit more. We then had other things to start thinking about. We did like a long distance walk that we raised some money for charity. So we walked the Cotswold Way, and we just kind of chucked all of our energies into that sort of stuff.
So you were coping with staying active, staying busy?
Busy, staying active, doing stuff that didn't involve, I suppose, too much kind of downtime to think. I don't think I allowed myself to get into that situation.
Yeah, and seeing things which are like triggers, you know, when you notice something, and it's always seems to be like, it's almost like omnipresent then, isn't it? When you've gone through that, and was there anything that you used to try and avoid or?
At the very, very beginning, those first kind of couple of weeks, I stayed clear of booze. I didn't really, I might have had one or two beers kind of thing, you know, like as a rugby playing man, I can quite happily sit and drink a fair few pints. And I just got into a situation where I thought in my head, if I allow myself to do that, I would do something stupid, not ever to hurt myself or anything like that, but just be a dick. just make really poor choices. Yeah. You've got other people to think about, haven't you? Like Laura was going through exactly the same situation as me, and I always think that she must have been going through a worse scenario considering she'd carried her for so long. I couldn't let myself down and therefore let her down, and the same with Bertie as well, and the rest of the family and stuff, you know. It just, just makes you a bit of a...
He's a good one, isn't he, James? He's a good one.
He's a good one. I walked with him for a long time on that night, on that fucking monstrous night walk.
It was great fun.
I reckon out of that 12 hours, we probably walked together for a good six of them.
For anyone who doesn't know, by the way, so you're on about a year ago, you did a big, it was an overnight walk, wasn't it?
Yeah, in July 2023, we did the Dad's and Granddad's group overnight walk. So we walked 50 kilometres, 35 miles in 12 hours. And me and James and I, we were the pace setters.
Yeah, we were marching out.
So we were marching, we were well in front of everyone, and then I just burnt out towards the end. But we had some, I mean, I don't actually really think we spoke much about sort of baby loss, really. We just spoke about any old shit that we could.
That's the beauty of the group, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got a feeling for a good hour, we were talking about what ice cream we were going to get at the first stop.
Yeah, the first stop, yeah. I needed a Calippo.
A Calippo,
yeah. Just needed a Calippo.
Just needed, and because it was July, it was baking hot, weren't it?
Yeah,
it was hot, muggy.
Yeah.
I used to get wound up by it. I always used to, sorry, this is really trivial. It's not Calippo, it's Calippo. And you've got to make sure you only have half of it and you leave the rest to melt. And then you have a little drink at the bottom. James, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would like to mention? You're always welcome to come back on. If you want to come on with Laura one episode as well.
Yeah. Well,
we'd love to get her in. But thank you. I think you spoke brilliantly.
Thank you.
And if anyone would like to leave a message for James or ask a question or anything, get at us on our socials. Like we said, they are Still Parents Podcast. Stillparentspodcast.co.uk is our website. We're here with Globals Make Some Noise. And we are just about done and dusted, I think, for this episode.
Yep.
Matt, do you want to tell everyone who we've got on next?
We have someone from Canada on next.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Shall I tell everybody to...
Oh, my goodness.
Matt, you booked it.
Matt, you're an absolute...
You're going to have to edit that out.
I'm leaving that bit in.
No, we've got a very big... we've got a very good... you carry on. I've lost my head.
So we're joined by Olympic gold medal?
Yeah, gold medalist.
Gold medalist Rebecca Adlington and her husband, Andrew.
Yeah. Was it 2012? Was it Olympics that she won?
Beijing.
Beijing, I think.
Oh, was it?
2008, I think.
Okay.
Yep.
And she's not from Canada.
Going to take the medal back if she turns out she is. Thank you very much, everybody. If you do get a moment or two to leave us a review, we really appreciate it. They do help get the podcast to be discovered. And if you don't mind, that'll be amazing. Thank you very much for taking a listen. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do through our website, through our socials as well. We'll be back, supported by Globals Make Some Noise. This is the Still Parents Podcast. Thank you very much. Take care, everyone.